due to the order of Narada-rupa. Thus, he accepted Kalakanya in a different way. In other words, the injunctions of Narada-rupa, or the path of devotional service, can be accepted by anyone within the three worlds, and certainly by the king of the others. Lord Chaitanya himself requested everyone to preach the cult of Bhakti Yoga all over the world, in every town and village. Preachers in the Krishna consciousness movement have actually experienced that even the Yavanas and Mavechas have taken to spiritual life on the strength of Narada Muni's Pantra-Trita Vidhi. When mankind follows the disciplic succession, as recommended by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, everyone throughout the world will benefit. Kalakanya continued, O gentle one, I am now present before you to serve you. Please accept me and thus show me mercy. It is a gentleman's greatest duty to be compassionate upon a person who is distressed. Putting out the numbers here at the island, that's what I can tell you. That's right. Sri Guru, Sri Janakura, which does not become the name of Swayam Kadala and the Dhamaswara. Ajikam Purubhya Stratri, the Sandhya Kedacha, Paridana, Pada, India, Vaishnava. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Adhiri Vahad Ashiva Shri Gaurava. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So Kalakanya is the daughter of what's her name. Incidentally, if I stop every now and then, means I'm making a sufficient chance. It becomes a habit. It's already happened, you may know, but actually I have this one piece of thinking of a second word, Vajaspa. It's related to Vajra, Vaj. A very difficult person, actually. She's already been described earlier in this chapter as being a very unfortunate person. Yeah. And her particular nature is like that. She's known as Durbhaga. She has no aga or opulence or good fortune. Krishna is Bhagavan. One who possesses all of but she is Dur Bhaga. Her Bhaga is Dur. It's bad. She's got very bad fortune. So this is the nature of time. Practically only detrimental. On the material platform, we experience how, in the initial stages, with practically anything, in the initial stages, time is apparently beneficial in that a child grows up. And as the child grows up in the initial stages, then the child is becoming bigger and stronger, and the intelligence is developing, so there is some positive feature there to the effects of time. But that's only in the earlier stages, or building, like this, anything material, practically. There's some earlier stage where things come to a point of maturity, and then after the point of maturity, then there's deterioration and ultimately destruction. And that is the greater part, actually. The greater part is the period of deterioration and ultimate destruction. So in our human form of life, we find that a person becomes mature by the time they're in their mid-20s or something like that. Then there's a gradual process of deterioration, which may not really be noticed until they're perhaps in their mid-30s or something like that. Not so much. But then it's very prominent. It's very prominent. And very, very persistent. And very unpleasant, actually. So the foolish young person, foolish child, is looking forward to his or her next birthday. They're looking forward, perhaps, to when the next holidays come, or something of this sort. When they finish school, perhaps they cannot even imagine that. That's so far away. But there's this idea of looking forward to one's birthday, holidays, something like this. But in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's pointed out that by the rising and setting of the sun, then Vishnu-Sai Gaura Vrindavan, Vishnu-Sai Satchitan, by the rising and setting of the sun, there is a process. A process is being recognized by those prominent, particularly prominent parts of the process. But by rising and setting, the sun is actually deteriorating the span of life of every human being and every living entity. But a foolish person doesn't notice that. However, for a devotee, there isn't such a deterioration. Even though on the material platform there is a deterioration, naturally, because the material body of the devotee is aging like anyone else's. But on the spiritual platform there actually isn't really such a deterioration. Therefore, this detrimental nature of time, acknowledged by certain prominent events like the rising and setting, the arrival of one's birthday, receiving something which one is looking forward to. So, in this way, time is passing, and to most people, the great majority, it's simply detrimental. So Srila Prabhupada actually found it rather amusing that the system of birthdays, people are looking forward to their birthday. Of course, in most cases, they'll get a few presents on the nose. Sometimes those are a little trivial, but you know, sometimes people give them something, so they look forward to that, maybe something worthwhile. But actually, the real fact is that there is a great landmark in the process of deterioration. One year this, too late. And gradually that time will come, and where Kalakanya, finally after beckoning and we're following her call, we cannot avoid following her call to approach her, but finally, I forget the exact relationships, but her sister or aunt or somebody who's known as Jala, old age, Kala Kanya, time, introduces you that here, meet Jala. She is my close associate, and she's just been waiting till she could meet you. She likes embracing people. She wanted to embrace you. Then this lady, Jirna, old age. She embraces everyone. And apparently, to some people, it may be an affectionate type of embrace, what they call the golden years. Actually, this is just a publicity stunt and a con on the part of this big business. Get people to work hard and all the end life. And then when they're too old so they can't really do anything with them longer, then tell them that it's the golden years. Very nice and very dignified and very pleasant and you can relax. Having worked so hard and struggled, now you can relax. But unfortunately, when people reach those so-called golden years, they find that at best it was gold plated. And maybe it was just some gold paint, artificial gold paint, which looked a little golden. But the actual substance, when you get beneath the surface, is very unpleasant. So in old age, Gerard embraces, it may look like an affectionate embrace, but actually it's very horrible having to go through old age. And finally, Gerard tells you that I would like you to meet my brother. In this material world, of all the factors in material life, the time factor is the most powerful. Actually, it's so powerful that Krishna identifies himself with it, and it is directly manifest from. In terms of the process of creation, it's manifest from the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, from Mahavishnu, and under the guidance of Ramadi, his eternal consort, who is an expansion of Lakshmi. When Mahavishnu glances, that glance is Shambhu or Lord Shiva, and within that glance there are a number of things. There are the living entities that have been dormant within Mahavishnu since the last annihilation. Then there is particularly the Kala Shakti, time energy. And that time energy has two parts to it, two divisions in a sense, or two effects, two characteristics like this. One is called Icha Shakti, that within the time Icha is carried, the will of the Lord, the desire of the Lord. And then there is the Kriya Shakti, the energy of activity. So these are all part and parcel of the Kala Shakti. They're different aspects of the Kala Shakti. So when the dormant living entities who are, so to speak, in something like a cocoon of their own karma, they're embedded within their karma, but that karma is inactive. So when they are injected into the womb of material nature, the Dara Shakti, Adara Shakti, part of the Kriya, then the Kala Shakti touches them. And it touches them in terms of the Icha Shakti, the will of the Lord, that they are yet to be activated, so they can continue their lives in this material world. And actually not just continue their lives within the material world, but have the facility to somehow or other turn around and go back to Krishna. They may not do that. They may just dive deeper into material existence, but actually the Ichha Shakti, the force of the will of the Lord, is that if they don't get the opportunity to act in the material world, they will not get the opportunity to turn back to Krishna. So that is the ultimate fact. Back to them. And then the Kriya Shakti is the force of activity. So again, their karma is activated. Their karma was dormant. So the conditioned soul, when his or her karma becomes dormant, they become dormant. Because they're simply connected to their karma. Reactions are coming, and they are responding to, they're acting and responding in terms of those reactions, but when the reactions stop, then they stop, because they're held by the karma. So, that Kriya Shakti, Ichha Shakti and Kriya Shakti activate the karma. So suddenly the living entity wakes up by the force of the reaction and becomes active again by the force of reactions. That stored up karma. This is all going on by the influence of time. Within time. Part and parcel of time is this Ichha Shakti and Kriya Shakti. And then time activates the three modes of material nature. The three modes of material nature are moving or fluctuating by the influence of time. So again, when time stops, they stop. But when time starts again, they start. And the various elements which have withdrawn into the pradhan state, they again start coming out and assuming their own individual states rather than simply being mixed up together. So the same. The living entities become active and pradhan proceeds to the state of mahatattva. And when it becomes mahatattva, then Lord Brahma starts manipulating the different individual elements. And the three modes are working. This is all the influence of time. So Krishna says, Kalos me look and shine with it. But I have time and I have come to engage everyone. So time is engaging everyone. And all the various ingredients of material nature and the same. Life in the material world is going on. And what is the end of that process of time? Mrityu sarva paramaścāraṇam. Krishna says, I am death. All of the time. So everything in the material world is headed towards the point of death, including the whole material world. The planets gradually, the whole system of material, of universal arrangement eventually goes into a state of deterioration at the prescribed time of the end of the universe. So in this way the universe is destroyed and the universe dies. Everything within this material world dies, and that is time. So time is very powerful. We shouldn't underestimate Kala Kanya. Yes. She's destroying everyone. Therefore, she is Durvaya. She apparently has very bad fortune. No one really wants her. She's being rejected already by more respectable persons than the Yamuna Raj. Yamuna Raj, he is not really a very respectable person. Yamuna, there's a word, well, Yava indicates everything. Yava, everything. So Yavana means someone who will eat everything. They don't really discriminate. They'll eat anything. So, Yavana Raj, the king of the Yavanas, he is not, as the Yavanas go, he may be respectable, but actually his position is not really respectable. He's not one of the high-born, highly cultured persons within this world, but rather he's the leader of those who are uncultured and who'll do anything, eat anything. If it feels good, do it. We were driving here this morning, and you may have seen there's some bumper stickers which say something, I mean, they're different slogans. They say, if it feels good, do it. Or, just do it. I don't know if you've seen that. Just do it. Probably where I've seen that. If it feels good, just do it. Don't worry about it. So I saw one this morning that said, I just did it. This is Yavana. This is Yavana. Feels good to do it. Just do it. So, Yavana is not culture. Because culture means, among other things, culture means that there's certain distinctions and discriminations made in terms of certain important factors, like particularly what is beneficial in culture. That people will try to live in a constructive way for their personal development and improvement, and ultimately to achieve the goal of life. And according to the Varnashram system, that is all done in terms of the position you're in. Sudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya, or Brahman, then according to whatever position you're in those terms, then there'll be a certain particular type of culture or certain aspects of Vedic culture which will be relevant to you, and you'll apply those and be careful to avoid other getting involved in other things. So this way, everyone, according to their nature, through this culture, can advance. But Yavana means particularly a person who doesn't follow a culture, but will do anything. And then that becomes his culture. His dance, his music, his art, his expression, writing, speaking language. That becomes the culture. A culture of anything. But actually, it becomes an animal culture. So, Kala Kanya was feeling frustrated. Important or at least highly qualified people like Narada Muni had refused her. And she had even cursed Narada. So she was widely refused. Her association was considered to be worth avoiding. So everyone was avoiding. So here the Yavana Raj is accepting, but he's not exactly, Prabhupada is making the point of the third point, he's not exactly accepting in the same terms that she's offering. Yes, she is making like a very gross type of approach, but the Yavana Raj has received some instruction from Narada Muni, and he is accepting. But he is accepting, actually, in a Krishna-conscious way. She's thinking, just accept me, just do it, or something. but not exactly in those terms. He is accepting her in a more Vedic or more Krishna conscious sense, and in this way she'll be benefited. And the whole relationship process of elevation, so Srila Prabhupada, her point, is applying this verse in those terms. That according to the Vedic principles, what is the culture of the yavanas and the lechans? Actually, they have no culture. They have no place, really. They're even less than sutra. So what is the opportunity for them? Generally, there's no opportunity. Therefore, they were not allowed even to stay within the human society, generally. And they would live outside the city. Just like in the Ramayana, there's the the king of the hunters, Nishadaraj, the king of the hunters. So he was living, and his community was living outside of the city, just in the forest, because they were considered to not have a culture, meaning a natural lifestyle which would bring one to the point of the perfection of the human life. They were considered to be essentially purusha pashu, animals in the form of human form. So, and they would just do anything, whatever they felt like doing, and no one would care. So, the Yavanaraj, he might be considered normally to be the leader of those people. So in other words, big enjoyer. Someone who would extravagantly do whatever he likes. But actually he's accepted Narada Muni. He's accepted Narada Muni's instructions. And as a result, he is now going to apply himself in a relationship with Kalakanyas in terms of Krishna consciousness, even though he's younger. So here Srila Prabhupada is saying that Krishna consciousness, unlike the material aspects or Karmakandhya section of the Vedas and those related parts of the Vedas, but the parts of the Vedas which deal with Krishna consciousness, and even particularly Narada Muni's part of the Vedic literatures, is the Pancharatra, Pancharatriki-vidhi, a form of deity worship, which is kind of like very spiritual and very broad and like this, not so much restricted by Karmakandhya considerations. So the Yavanaraj is being engaged by Narada. And even though he is an improbable type of person, and Kala Kanya is an improbable type of person in terms of people who could be uplifted, but still by the mercy of Narada Muni, if they follow his instructions, they can both be uplifted. So similarly, Narada Muni, through his Pancharatriki Vidhi, and in Krishna consciousness in general, those parts of the Vedic tradition which are actually transcendental in Krishna consciousness. There's facilities for anyone to become Krishna conscious. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. What the background is, what the culture is, if there's a culture. See, Yavana culture could not really be called a culture. If in the Western world, in the Yavana world, we use the word culture, but it's in an uncultured way. In other words, we're using it in a way we don't really understand what it is. And we just happen to be using it. But it's not strictly speaking. Yavana culture is not really a culture. You cannot really use the term. spirit. Just like you cannot have a fallen pure devotee. Those two concepts cannot come together. So, a very improbable combination here. But by the mercy of Narada Muni and by the mercy of Krishna consciousness, even though everything is very improbable, but actually it's going to be very nice. It's going to be very nice, and everyone involved is going to become advanced in Krishna consciousness and go back to Godhead. So similarly, we find that as we spread Krishna consciousness, the main things we look for when we are looking for candidates who could become a devotee, who could take up Krishna consciousness, then we don't look so much to see what is the culture. But we look to see if there's some interest in taking shelter of these things. Like Yamadaraj, he took shelter of the instructions of Narada. He took shelter of Krishna consciousness. So we look to see where people are interested in taking shelter. And that we consider auspicious. And that we will work with those people we can work with. And where those people who are cultured or somewhat cultured at least aren't interested in Krishna consciousness, then we won't get so much involved. To whatever degree they may be interested, of course, we will certainly try to engage, but we will not focus on them and ignore those people who are actually interested. So really the main thing we're looking for is where there is interest in Krishna consciousness. It's said that in terms of the three modes of material nature, people indifferent of the modes are more or less likely to take to Krishna consciousness. Someone who's in the mode of ignorance, then their condition is something like wet wood, like a very green type of wood, something which is quite saturated. Then you may be able to make it burn, but it won't be easy. And then the mode of passion is like half wet, half dry, something like that. Easier to ignite, but still not really easy. And mode of goodness is considered like very dry wood, immediately it'll burst into flame. So, however though, in this Kali Yuga, if someone simply takes an interest, if someone simply becomes attached to the movement of Lord Chaitanya, if they become a little attached to chanting the holy names, then this has something like an explosive effect. Yes, if you have something explosive, then it doesn't really matter what the wood is like, when the wood is green or half green or quite dry. If you have something some explosive, then it doesn't really matter so much, but it will transform very powerfully. So, those who come in contact with Lord Chaitanya and who take up the Sankirtan movement and who become attached to the Sankirtan movement, then even if they are like the Yavanaraj, even if they are coming from background which in certain Vedic terms would be considered undesirable, but the potency of that explosive Sankirtan movement is such that their lives will be transformed regardless of their external conditions so much in the modes of material nature. So that is what we are looking for as preachers. That is what Srila Prabhupada was looking for when he came to the Western world. He could have stayed in India and and certainly become a popular sort of Indian Vaishnava preacher figure without great difficulty. But that was not his aim. His aim was to find where it is, to set off that explosion of Lord Chaitanya's mercy, spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. So in this way, Prabhupada says that Lord Chaitanya has requested us to spread Bhakti Yoga all over the world. And we see that where we try to do that wholeheartedly and simply give people Lord Chaitanya's mercy, then any type of person, even Yamaniraj and his followers, the minor Yamanas and Malechas like ourselves, even people like that, when they get the mercy of Narada Muni in the form of the deity and rules and regulations of devotional service, and when they get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya in the form of chanting the holy names, then their lives become very auspicious, to whatever extent they actually absorb themselves in that. So this way, Yamaniraj is accepting time, but in a different way. And therefore it's said in Srimad Bhagavatam that whereas for the ordinary people, time is deteriorating everything, and time is only bad, really. But for the devotees, they don't see time like that. And time does not really have that effect on them spiritually. Materially, of course, the devotees are getting older and so on. That is going on. But spiritually, time means, for a devotee, facility for serving Krishna. Facility for advancing in Krishna consciousness. That's what it means. So therefore, the devotees don't mind time. And ultimately, when time culminates and comes to the final peak with the time of death, then for the devotee, that aspect of time means final opportunity to go back to Krishna and get out of this material world. And we see that. We've seen that in this fourth canto of the story of Dhruva Maharaj. When death came, when the time of death came, then some Vaikuntha airplanes came to take him to Vaikuntha. But the personality of death came. And as Dhruva was approaching the Vaikuntha airplanes, death himself stood in between. In other words, you have to pass me if you want to get on those Vaikuntha airplanes. In other words, it's a test, a final test. But Dhruva Maharaj, he was so advanced in Krishna consciousness that he simply stepped up onto the head of death and used the head of death as a step to more easily get into the Vaikuntha airplane. And away he went. So, for the devotee who is very, very serious about Krishna consciousness, then it's exactly the same situation, that when the time of death comes for such a devotee, it's not really a big test. It's rather a facility. Now I can get out of this material world and go back to Krishna. Of course, we shouldn't be really too concerned about liberation, getting out of getting out of Jayanta's room and all the difficulties and just go back to Goloka, just forget about the place, something like that. And indeed, the advanced devotee will not be thinking like that. But still in another sense, the Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the Vaishnava dies to live. When the Vaishnava, pure, advanced of the Vaishnava, leaves his or her material body, then they can go back to Goloka Vrindavan and they don't have to worry about the uncomfortable material body. Something like this. For the devotees, time is not such a bad thing. Actually, time is certainly is really a facility. Of course, we should use the time, make use of the facility, and actually use our time to the maximum of Krishna's service. And when we do that, then it's fine. Kala Kanya is not an undesirable person. In a sense, we may accept her without fear. Wholeheartedly engage her wholeheartedly in Krishna's service. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Well, samskara is related to the word, and the word Sanskrit, they're related. Sanskrit, of course we take Sanskrit or Sanskrit to mean that it's the name of the language, but Sanskrit means culture. Yeah. The word Sanskrit, when it's translated into English, means culture. So samskara means activities which encourage that culture. So there are certain transitional points in a person's life where they have to be prepared for the transition, or what's going to the next stage, what they're going to be doing in the next stage. So samskara means some ceremonial activity. But it's to help fix the person in that condition which is related to the next phase that they're now entering in their lives. Yeah. There are, if I remember correctly, 11 samskaras, starting with Garbhadana, and then there's various others. Then we get the hair cutting, first grains, beginning education as a samskar, and then there's the marriage samskar, it's the second to last one, I think, and then death, the funeral ceremony, is the last samskar. So they're all special ceremonies which help, you could say, gear a person so they can then enter into the next phase, which they're now going into. Yeah. Like eating grains for a child. Yeah. So that there's a ceremony for that, eating grains, and particularly grains which are offered to Krishna, is a very important part of the development of the person. So there's a ceremony. So they can enter into that eating of grains, Krishna's in the right way. So they can enter into marriage in the right way. So a big samskara. Now all these samskaras were very big. Nowadays, really only, I mean, the biggest I think is the wedding samskara. Then the death samskara is pretty big. And the birth samskaras are also popular. Wedding samskaras are very big. But all the samskaras were that big. They were very big events. So, you know, when a person goes through the wedding samskara in India, you know, it takes days, it can take weeks. Oh, yeah, the wedding can take weeks. It's a big thing. By the time they finish their samskara, they know I'm married. And they know, you know, they've been prepared that it means this and this and this, and you know, this is where I'm at now. So that is samskara. Yeah. It's to prepare a person. So when they go into that next phase, they're in it. Yeah. nature, orders of life, the Brahmins and Kshatriyas and Vaishyas particularly. You know, karma is there, but they're acting in such a way as to, you could say, manage their karma. It's not that they just do anything and then they get the reaction. You know, they don't really think about what they do. And when the reaction comes, they don't know where it's coming from. But they would gear their lives so as to organize their karma so that they advance karmically and spiritually also. So they would say that because of their karma, they're born in the good family. That's true. And now they're born in the family, now they're going to make sure they get good karma. They're going to organize their lives in such a way they avoid getting any more bad karma. And they only get good karma. In this way they, you know, they're directing their lives in a certain direction. Ultimately to go back to Godhead, or, you know, in the more purely karmakandhya sense, a birth in the heavenly planets, or something like that. So they're organizing the karma, making sure they get the karma.
So what you're talking about, auspicious gestures, sanskara
focus, making it auspicious. Creating, it's like creating foundation for that next phase, so that when you pass through the next phase, because you have the foundation, you're able to do everything in the next phase in a very organized way to produce the desired, to help, you know, to contribute towards the desired end result. You know, when a child started his education, there was a big festival and a whole procedure. You know, it's not that they just got a school uniform and they just dropped off at school and that was it. But there's a whole thing, the children were geared up for being educated. So then when they ended up in the Gurukul, you know, they were really there. And they knew why they were there. Hare Krishna, then you'll become elevated to being a, well, it depends, but there's a very good chance you can be elevated to the position of a Brahmin. Because, see, these various activities like worshipping the deity, for which you need to be a Brahmin, they're very beneficial. Chanting the holy names is the main thing of this age, and it's the very foundation of take it out, then the deity worship will fall down, sacrifices will, everything else will fall down. But the thing is that the chanting of the holy names, you know, it's the foundation and always the most important part. It's always the most important part. But these other things like deity worship particularly, they enhance Krishna consciousness so much. And when a person has become purified through chanting the holy names, then they're able to do the deity worship and gain a lot of benefit from it. So it's not that we should avoid doing deity worship. It's not that we don't need it. You know, we can just chant Hare Krishna and that will be sufficient. You know, in theory it could be like that. But there are also certain parts of deity worship which are more easily available through deity worship than they are directly through. through chanting the holy names. They're available through chanting the holy names. But, you know, the maintenance of rabbinical standards, that's all very intimately part of the Vedic and the process of deity worship. So, through following deity worship on the basis of the holy names, that development of certain rabbinical qualities is encouraged in a more direct sense than it is through simply chanting the holy names. So, Prabhupada discusses this in Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's a verse in which Lord Chaitanya says, you don't need to do anything except chant the holy names. You don't even need to be initiated. You just chant the holy names, full stop. Then Prabhupada refers to Jiva Goswami's explanation of that verse. And Jiva Goswami makes this point that through the process of deity worship, certain, like, personal purifying things are very readily available. And people need this for the purification of their character.